veteran speaker here during the 2000 before Bob Orr retired full time. Before that, he was with Lifeline Chaplaincies. And at the end of 2000, he went up to Austin and was part of the graduate school of theology there. Now he says he's a financial planner, a public minister at Bastrop Church of Christ, and he's the executive vice president for advancement for Lifeline. The last position is without remuneration. So he's glad to be here. Carson, it's good to see you.
Probably assumed that he got involved for a lack of father-in-law. And I want to dispel that rumor. and let him tell you how he actually he became involved with Lifeline so that he became the director of development for this region. Quentin Loughlin.
Have anything to do with tonight's Bible class? And I said no, but I was wrong. It does because I remember
Testament is generally divided up in the books of the Gospels, then the book of history, which is Acts, then the letters of Paul, and or the letters, general epistles, and then there's the book of Revelation. But you'll notice there's the book of history, there's the Gospels, there are the epistles. But where are the books of poetry? Where are the books of poetry in the New Testament? words too. I love my words. They just sometimes come to my mind. The problem, I got that from my mother. You know, someone will say something and I'll come up with some dumb analogy. But Mom, one time I was thinking about moving from a church where I was the pulpit minister. I'd been there for 5 years or so. And I'd call my mother. Anytime I wanted some wisdom, I'd call Mom. She was a fountain of wisdom. And I said, Mom, I'm really in love with the church here, but I've been here 5.5 years. It's in the middle of Oklahoma. I'm out from Oklahoma. We're homesick. I could probably stay here the rest of my life if I wanted to. It seems like they love me and I love them. And they love our family. I said, I'm comfortable here. And my mother said, well, you might be comfortable on the couch, but you might need to run by. I mean, just today, we were talking about, somebody was talking about something. And I can't remember what it was. It had nothing to do with elevators. But we were talking about making some great change in something. And I said, remember, when you go hunting for alligators, be sure that you duct tape them the mouth. That was a proverb. Having something to do with the subject at hand. But you can see now, if you don't have the context for it, a proverb doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? Unless you know what a proverb is, a piece of wisdom from human experience that's down in the heart that affects the way you behave in a good way. And a proverb is a pithy way of expressing that bit of human wisdom. We know that according to the Bible, a wise man is generally a good man. And the opposite of a wise man is a fool or foolish man. And we all know that the wise man builds a house on a rock, and the foolish man builds a house on the sand. And that was a proverb of Jesus, or a parable of Jesus, as it were. A parable is simply an expanded proverb, a Bible story, an earthly story with heavenly meaning. And so, whenever we're looking at the book of James, I think sometimes we get it into our heads that James contradicts Paul. But in reality, James is not trying to be a theologian. He's trying to be a wise man. Here's how a not wise man will live. Here's what a wise man will do. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's not a sin if you interrupt people when they're talking. It's simply a matter of wisdom to be slow to speak, quick to listen, slow to anger. You see, in other words, if you want to be a wise man, you learn how to listen before you speak. And as a matter of fact, even in the book of Proverbs, it tells us that a man who is quick to speak will not be listened to, whereas a man who listens will be heard. Isn't that odd? A man who listens will be heard, but the man who is quick to speak will not be heard. It didn't say it exactly that way, but that's the Carson Stevens translation of the particular verse of Proverbs. I can't remember. At any rate, the book of James is like that. It's telling us how we ought to behave in a wise way if we want to be wise. So he said, when he says, let not many of you become, for it is this an example, let not many of you become teachers, my beloved, for you know that those who teach will be judged with stricter judgment. I used to think that means that those who are preachers or teachers will get a stricter judgment before God. It may be, but I know it's true from human experience. Right? I know it from human experience that those of us who teach are always judged with stricter judgment. Isn't that right, Kim? Isn't that right? Aren't those who preach and teach and are elders, don't we hold them up to a higher standard? So you see what I'm saying with James? He's giving us pieces of wisdom, not so much as doctrinal statements of theological importance. They are theological in the sense that this is wisdom from above. Wisdom from above, not wisdom from below. In fact, that's what James is talking about. In the very first chapter of his book, he says in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. And so, James is telling us that about being quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. He's simply telling us this is what a wise man will do. And then when he says be doers of the word and not merely hearers, he's saying a wise man is not one who simply hears what comes to preaching. He's someone who will do it. Now all of this has something to do with some things that I've learned from being involved with Lifeline Chaplaincy, and that is when we go into the hospital room, what do you think is your, how many of you actively visit the hospital, visit the sick? Let me be honest, raise your hand. How many active hospital visitors are we? Okay. what circumstances do you do that? How do you feel when you do that? Do you notice a pattern here? Listening is the most important thing you can do to for another person. I'm convinced. Scott Peck has written several books. He's dead now. But he wrote a book called The Road Less Traveled. And one of his quotes was this. He said, "You cannot the emotion that comes with the butt?
Blood pressure rises.
Blood pressure rises, right. Okay, blood pressure rises. Then what? What's your natural response?
To get angry.
You see, the natural response is, that was a great sermon, but I can feel the back stiffen, the hair starting to rise, the blood pressure going on. I disagree with one thing you said. I'll tell you tonight. Why is that? No, it was a wonderful sermon, the best one you've ever heard, but I disagree with one thing you said. Yeah, so you're already reading hard, I can tell you. You've been there before, haven't you? Yeah, I've been there before. And I have to, obviously. When he says be slow, be quick to hear, slow to anger, that's the situation he's talking about. A wise person will listen quickly, bite the tongue, and be slow to anger. Slow to anger. Because anger doesn't get you where you need to go, right? You said that was the best sermon I'd ever preached, right? But there's one thing you disagree with me about. Why? What do you mean? You know, that's kind of the thought that goes through your mind. Why did you set me up that way only to tell me that you disagree with me?
You have the right to be wrong.
Yeah, see, that's an angry response, isn't it? You have the right to be wrong. That's a defensive response. So the wise person is going to be quick to hear,
How else would you approach them other than finding, praising them for the good things and then bringing in the thing that you disagree with? Is there some other way of...
You mean how to criticize someone effectively?
Yeah, I mean, you're not the Bible writers, for example, in the epistle. Say good things about the people they're writing to and then bring in the negative stuff later. Isn't that how they do it?
Yes. Yes, the brother who said, even Paul's letters, he starts off with a compliment and then he brings in criticism. And he does. He's very good at that. Unfortunately, Paul was only able to do this in writing. So he had to do it in some way, in some effective way. I suggest that if you have a criticism, that it's better to do it maybe more gently. Say, Ken, that sermon, it was really intriguing. And it got me to thinking. It's one thing you said was blank, 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 blank. But I was wondering, how does that fit in with blank, 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 blank? And they seem to contradict. Those two things contradict. And I'm wrestling with that. So would you mind if we got together for lunch sometime? Or maybe you won't take that much time. Just explain to me, how does that work? Because they seem contradictory. You said this. And I've heard that, and I've also heard this. So how would you, can you help me out there? So let him participate in the criticism, because he can think it through as well as I can. He can think it through as well. Let me tell you about a recent phone call, okay? I mean, a real phone call. I'm teaching a class on the book of Philemon. I hadn't had as much time to prepare as I would like, but I was up there saying, guess what? Onesimus means useless. Onesimus means useless, and can you imagine somebody having a slave, and then you call him, you know, call him and say, hey, useless, come here. Hey, useless, come here. I said, can you imagine that? And I'm going on and on with this. I went on with this about 15 minutes, and most of the people were smiling. You know why they were smiling, Ken? Because Onesimus means useful. Not useless. I got it entirely backwards. One sweet little girl, lady, about in her 30s, she says, my Bible says Onesimus means useful. And I looked at the text and I remembered, you're right. I had just made a fool out of myself very confidently and very boldly. Now, I would have preferred not to have used useless for Onesimus, and I should have said useful. I would have preferred that. I would have preferred to have been in the hole in the ground when I was told that. But everybody was real kind about it, and no one said one more word about it. They didn't have to. They could see the red all over my face. Right? We all know when we hear something that we're wrong. Right? We know when we're wrong. We just don't want it rubbed in. Somebody said that one thing that most people really want is to be right, even if it's about a bad thing. And so it's better if we can help that person save face and not bring on a criticism that it's in their face, but it's more like, would you tell me, can you explain this to me? What am I inviting you to do? I'm inviting you to let me listen while you work it out in your head. Is that fair enough? All right. I think we have some announcements, don't we? Bill? Bill? Oh, Jeremy's got the announcements. Okay. Listen, thanks for the invitation to come. I've enjoyed being with you, always do. I think this is the first time I've ever tried to teach a class with you guys. Every time else I come with a sermon, which gives me the advantage of not having to hear your opinion and for you not having the opportunity to correct me whenever I've made mistakes.
Thank you, brother, for speaking to us tonight. You know, my wife was very glad that I was here tonight because she looked at me several times making sure I was listening to the fact that I need to be a better listener. Tracy Hobbs and daughter of Cleo Jean Tarver's